So it's going to be a busy weekend here on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett coming up Sunday night on Coast to Coast. George Norrie will be hosting, and George is going to have on an expert on end times and Bible prophecies, a guy named Chuck Missler. They're going to be talking about this May 21st prophecy, the one that you've been hearing a lot about on Coast to Coast, which as I understand it, has recently been kind of moved, right, a little bit from it's supposed to start May 21st, but it doesn't actually end until in October, whatever. And if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you will see there is a link up for a convoy of trucks that are all billboarded for this Judgment Day, May 21st, 2011. Where do they get the money for this? Unless they've got a balloon payment coming up in June for these trucks. But anyway, you can go see that at coasttocoastam.com. And you can take a look, too, at a video that we linked up there from a guy named Jonathan Colton. Jonathan Colton, if you are unfamiliar with him, he is kind of a geek culture troubadour. And he loves songs about aliens and, in this case, zombies. A song from his from a couple of years ago called R.E. Your Brains, which is about zombies in the office place. If you were to get a memo from the zombies down the hall at your office, what would that be like? And there's a new video out, and it's very funny. His fans have been remaking that song in video form for years, and Jonathan Colton, the latest version of R.E. Your Brains, we linked up at coasttocoastam.com as a tribute to last Saturday night's very popular zombie show and the fact that we had on Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead in that first hour. By the way, go back and listen to that on Streamlink if you have it, or I always forget, Coast Insider now is what we're calling it. But anyway, all of that to be said, go look at the End Times link and you'll see the trucks that are rolling out to promote this tomorrow night. George has on Chuck Missler to talk about it. And we really weren't going to go to that well tonight, except, you know, sometimes you just can't choose your news. And this week, Egyptologist and author David Elkington was the subject of a startling article that says a new collection of books has been discovered. It is currently being held up by a private owner. But these books, for those people who have looked at them, and David Elkington is one, could be as powerful or even more powerful a discovery than the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, that says a lot. And there are images of it that we've linked up. If you go to tonight's show, you can look at the related article and you can see it. These are little metal books. And some people say that these are the books that are referred to in the book of Revelation in the Christian Bible that says that refers to the unsealing of books before the end times. So you put this together if you want to, but coming up next hour, we'll talk with David Elkington about what we know is in the books and how was this archaeological discovery made, or at least what are the versions of this archaeological discovery? There are a couple. And we'll talk about what we know about them and what we don't know about them yet. These are metal books that are at least 2,000 years old, what we call codices. If you read about it in the news and you've been more curious, we'll get you more coming up next hour. But first, there's a new film out called Source Code. I saw it earlier in the week. It stars Jake Gyllenhaal. It's a really good romance sci-fi time travel movie. I think it's probably more sci-fi time travel than romance, but there's a nice romantic element. It reminds me a little bit of the classic Nicholas Meyer movie, Time After Time. But it has this it's a fun combination of elements that actually speak to a kind of, well, for some people, a present, for other people, a future science. The idea of what we can do if we were able to harness the human power of the brain and the cybernetic technology of creating an an architectural awareness between the human and the computer. What we might be able to do with the technology that is coming down the line, could we ever be in a place where we could do what they do in the movie Source Code? And we'll talk about that with an expert on it next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. I know I stumbled through the explanation of computational neuroscience, but it is a fairly new concept for a lot of people, and Dr. Charles Higgins is an expert on that. The Department of Neuroscience and the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering. He has his PhD from California Institute of Technology, and he joins us here live on Coast to Coast. Good evening, Dr. Higgins.
Good evening.
Okay, so have you seen Source Code?
Yes, actually, I saw it for the second time today.
Okay. You know what? I really enjoyed it. It's really fun.
I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah, but through the whole movie, Source Code, I kept thinking, shut up, we can't do that, or wouldn't it be cool if we could really do that, or I wonder how long it is until we could really do that. And I don't want to give too much of the movie away for people who haven't seen it yet, because that's part of the joy of it. But it purports to be rooted in an advanced understanding in a particular field of science. So if you could explain what is possible about time travel, or at least consciousness traveling, from the link up between, say, a living human being and a computer system.
So, first of all, the scientist Dr. Rutledge in this show seems to have identified what consciousness is in the first place, and we're a very long way from that.
Right.
If we knew what we meant by consciousness, if we knew what physical instantiation it has, then I can imagine in some period of time, 20, 30, 50 years, we'll have enough electrodes to record from a brain and maybe get a hold of some computer creation that might represent your consciousness. Now, this movie takes it a step farther. So you want to not only sense what's going on in somebody's brain, you want to stimulate it to the extent that they forget their real body, and they're having a visual experience and a somatosensory experience, and they smell, they feel just like they're in somebody else's position. And that's a very long way from current technology. So
okay, so let's stop right there. So that much of it, it's fun to watch, but it's as much science, it's more science fantasy than science fiction, per se.
Well, I have to say, when I watched this movie, my reaction is a little different from yours. I was thinking the whole time, how can I do this? How can I make this work?
So, bet you did.
my roots as an engineer, I want to put this together.
So, right. You're thinking, where do I get funding for this? Who do I apply to get a grant for this?
The first step is just conceptualizing, how could this be done? And throughout the whole movie, I was wondering, I was imagining how this device could be hooked up and how I could build it. And at the end, we got sort of a glimpse, and I was a bit disappointed by the glimpse of the hardware that was involved, because what I'm expecting is monitoring of the entire brain on every surface.
Yeah, we definitely don't get that. Again, we're talking with Dr. Charles Higgins about the movie Source Code, because it pushes a very cool idea that somehow our consciousness could be harnessed and manipulated to be able to go back in time and to be able to see the world through somebody else's experience as a way, in this case, of trying to thwart terrorism. And I'm not giving anything away, because this is all in the commercials. But it speaks to, I mean, it's part of the justification for this. They start talking about, you know, parallel universes and the kind of the thin place in the theory of relativity where this might be able to be possible. Am I getting that right?
Well, so when I watched the movie a second time today, I was looking very carefully for what theory they put forward in the movie. And the first time I watched it, I didn't catch the quantum mechanic view of things, but that actually makes some sense to me. So in quantum mechanics, the idea is that a particle can exist in multiple states at once.
Right.
And so it's actually possible for it to be in one place and also in another place at the same time with some probability. So it's vaguely possible that some sort of parallel universe theory might be possible based on quantum mechanics. And that's been said by quite a few people. So that doesn't really tell you how it might work or how you might transfer the consciousness of a brain that is currently alive to a brain that currently no longer exists. But it does give you the idea that maybe there's some advanced physics understanding there that's beyond what we can do right now.
Okay, wait. But see, and again, without giving away anything in source code, the character whose consciousness is being projected into another human being is actually being projected into a human being that still exists. It's just he doesn't exist in the future. So their justification for swapping out the consciousnesses of these two people is that this other guy is, you know, doomed to die. So he's essentially dead. So they can put the consciousness of the military operative into his brain because they figure he's already got a death sentence.
Well, as I understood things, at the time they were projecting the soldier's consciousness, the brain of the person to whom they were projecting was already dismantled. It was already gone.
Okay.
So this whole thing happened after the train explosion.
Okay. So it's kind of tricky, but it's fun, and it doesn't really hold up necessarily. The movie itself is not intended to be a science lesson. So let's move it off the particulars of the movie source code and just say, fun to watch, great suspension of disbelief, go with it, and you'll have a good time. But what is possible? Where are we right now in terms, Dr. Higgins, of being able to mesh, create new architectures in biological computational neuroscience?
So in terms of interfacing with brains, we're at a fairly primitive state. We have electrodes that you might see hundreds or thousands of electrodes that can be implanted in probably not human brains. There's a lot of it going on in monkey, cat, and rat brains. How long those electrodes last is the real problem with our technology right now. You might see some that last for a year or two at the outside. So any kind of brain surgery is extremely dangerous. There's all sorts of terrible things that can happen to you. So what you'd like to do is you'd like to have an implant where you could record from a huge section of the brain chronically for many years. And that's not something that we are capable of right now. Furthermore, thousands of electrodes is not close to being enough to record from the hundreds of millions, the billions of neurons in a human brain. So
right. In
terms of getting a whole sensory experience, we would be extremely lucky with something even in maybe 10 or 20 years to be able to stimulate just the visual areas of the brain, just to give you a full visual experience. To go farther than that is going to take a lot more electrodes and a lot more, I mean, you're going to have to open up huge surfaces of the brain somehow or find some way to record from and even stimulate neurons all over the brain.
Okay. So like let me pull this back a little bit to technology that I think exists already, and that is the ability to say steer a plane, a jet plane, by putting on a helmet, right? Or some of the technology they're already working on for people who are disabled, where impulses from the brain might be able to trigger certain physical objects or, you know, living aids. You know what I mean?
So it is possible, without breaking the skull, by using surface electrodes to record enough information to make sort of very slow rate decisions. So I actually ran a workshop last summer in Colorado where we were trying to use EEG signals to drive a robot.
Right.
It turns out that the robot commands come out in sort of a 1 or 2 second delay, and all you can basically do is say forward, back, or maybe left, right. So I wouldn't want to command a fighter with EEG electrodes at this point.
But isn't that coming? I mean, that kind of that Firefox model with Clint Eastwood? I mean, I thought that kind of technology was much closer.
So what really bugged me in the movie was...
In source code?
Yes.
Okay.
Was there any consent? And I don't want to spoil the movie here.
Right, so we can't. Right.
Okay, so I'm really concerned in the future that right now what you have is neural implants that are being used on consenting patients. And when we get beyond the consenting patients, I'm afraid the next place you're going to see those showing up is in the military.
So, right, because you essentially sign consent when you sign up.
And I'm afraid that somebody who's 20 years old in a 20 or 30 years is going to be told, you can't fly this brand new fighter unless you submit to brain surgery and you're going to have a neural implant. And that's the only way that you're going to be able to fly this fighter. Otherwise, you're going to be too slow. You won't be competitive.
Right. That's the price of admission if you want into the program.
And then you're going to find at that point that about a third of the people die right away. and about two-thirds of them die within a few years. And
interesting.
Eventually, after doing that, maybe we'll get good at the implant technology. But exactly how do you develop a human brain implant? What's the ethical way of getting that thing working in the first place? Clearly, you can start in hospitals, but that's going to be very slow rate. That's going to take you decades. You can work with monkeys, but monkeys can't really tell you what they experience. They can't tell you what they feel.
So what's the highest level right now? Is it, you mentioned the robot, but I thought we were further along in the topical sensory helmet thing, that we were able to start to be able to drive things or fly things based on impulses in the brain. No?
No, I agree. There are some projects in which a lot of information is taken from the skull, and with that, you're able to get a fairly low information rate, which you could use to drive a radio-controlled car or something of that sort. I still don't think we're at the information rate that would be required to fly a fighter jet. We're not there with surface electrodes, and I don't see it getting there, honestly. Unless there's some sort of breakthrough that's a bit inconceivable at this point, in order to do any high-rate information, like flying a fighter, you're going to require something invasive.
We're talking with the associate professor, Dr. Charles Higgins, in the Department of Neuroscience, Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering in the University of Arizona. So this technology, the idea of being able to mesh the computer, the biological cranial impulses with a computer, it has a world of possibilities, but we're not that far down the road yet. What specifically, what is the goal? I mean, let's take the military piece out of it for the moment. What would be the dream of scientists like yourself to be able to mesh these two things together with a new architecture?
Well, I have to say there's at least two possible goals here, and my goal is the more uncommon of the two. So there's quite a few people working on neural prosthetics. So the idea would be you have somebody who has a broken spinal cord, and they have a perfectly good brain, and maybe they even have perfectly good limbs. And what you'd like to do is interface directly from the brain somehow down to their limbs, or in the case of somebody who doesn't have limbs, you'd like to create some sort of a robot that they can control directly with their brain.
So a new exoskeleton, so to speak, that would help support them and move them, or yep. Something that would just bypass the spinal column altogether and go right to the musculature?
Well, we don't have any way to repair the spinal cord at this point, and probably the easiest way to get information out of the nervous system is through the cortex someplace. So the idea would be to record from motor cortex way up in the brain and use that somehow to control a prosthesis. So that's something that is already beginning to happen. It's successful with monkeys to some extent, and I see it happening. I think it'll be common in 30 years. I think it'll be something that we'll have great success with. My interest is actually a little bit aside from that. So my interest is really in computing systems that have an artificial component as well as a living component. So it turns out our computers, like the IBM PC that everybody has on their desk, they're really, really good at certain things, like number crunching, for example. You just can't beat Microsoft Excel at crunching numbers. On the other hand, brains are really good at certain things as well, dealing with uncertainty, dealing with parallel information, like all the sensory information we have coming into our body. Computers are not so good at that. So what if we could build something that would be partially alive, perhaps a genetically engineered neural system, and partially electronic? I think that would be the best of all computing systems, and that's the thing that I'm really interested in.
And how far do you think in your lifetime you'll be able to achieve some significant high water marks on that?
Actually, I do think so. I think that right now what I'm trying to do is interface existing brains with robots. There are other people who are doing research where they're growing small brains in a petri dish, basically, and interfacing with those brains to control robots and other things. And that is
what
meat in the middle.
You're growing brains in a petri dish?
Yes. So it's very difficult to do. Okay, so I'm taking an existing brain that already has some function. They're trying to grow a brain from scratch, which, as you can imagine, is quite difficult. But if you were to grow a brain in some sort of an environment where you could record and stimulate from those neurons, if that neuron network meant anything, it could be used to do whatever brains do. The problem is that those don't really turn into brains yet. The neuron cultures don't have all the things that make a brain up, all the neurotransmitters and all the chemicals that make it develop properly. So they're not really brains as such. They are brain cells, but they're not connected up in a particularly meaningful way.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. Well, we're talking with Dr. Charles Higgins. He's one of the guys who's in on the science of this new movie, Source Code, opened up this weekend. It's doing very well with Jake Gyllenhaal. My favorite concept from the movie, though, coming up in just a second, and I want to ask Dr. Charles Higgins about this because he's an expert on neuroscience, computational neuroscience, putting together a new synthesis between human and computer thinking. And we'll get back to that next. Remember, the top of the hour, too. We'll go back in time 2,000 years. We found some very ancient books. We'll hear more about it on Coast to Coast. What is possible and what isn't in this computational neuroscience field, which we see exhibited in the new movie Source Code? I mean, it's preposterous at points, but other times, I mean, it's preposterous only because it just seems like that can't possibly happen, but maybe it could. It just might not be in our lifetime. And we're talking about what is possible in the synthesis between the human brain and a computer program, and just what we might see in the near future. One of my favorite moments from Source Code, a particular type of argument made for this computer science, next on Coast to Coast. And we'll get a couple calls in for you for Dr. Charles Higgins before the end of this hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Ponett. We're talking about the science of the movie Source Code, which is out doing quite well this weekend. This comes after the movie Limitless just a few weeks ago with Bradley Cooper, which also pushed kind of the boundaries of how we could look at the brain and the role of consciousness and how science might be manipulating that coming up in the near future. In this case, in Limitless, it was with an untested pharmaceutical drug. But let me ask you, Dr. Higgins, since at the University of Arizona, you are studying neuroscience and this computational synthesis between humans and technology. Tell me about your understanding of how parallel universes may or may not be the same thing as time travel. That was kind of this theme that was running through Source Code, and I couldn't quite get my head around that. That right now, first of all, do you believe in parallel universes, Dr. Higgins?
I have to say I'm not able to comment scientifically on that. It seems as if quantum mechanics does give you some reason why you might believe in parallel universes, because there's a possibility that a particle can exist in multiple states at once.
Okay, but do you believe, I mean, that having been said, aren't there string theorists that would say parallel universes almost have to exist?
I have to say, from my perspective, I'm a neuroscientist, not a physicist. I don't believe in parallel universes.
Okay.
But I think if you wanted to explain what's going on in the movie, that's what you ought to hook onto.
Okay. So, but would going to a parallel universe using people that would include, say, right now, a conversation, you know, going on in a parallel universe theoretically between you and me in a parallel universe, except maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe we got caught on a diversion, and we are now we're talking about sports. I mean, that it's the same kind of thing, but almost not, and then quite. Would going to a parallel universe be the same as time travel?
Well, I think you have to do two things. So first of all, if you transfer to a parallel universe, it's not clear what time it would be. It's not clear that it would be the same time.
Okay.
And in Source Code, they did more than transfer to a parallel universe. They transferred to a parallel universe at a different time, at a specific time, which was 8 minutes before the death of a person.
Right.
So that requires a significant leap just beyond getting to the parallel universe. You have to control the time that you arrive in the parallel universe.
Right. Okay. That's the part I kept coming back to, was in a parallel universe, and I'm not giving away, I mean, there's some people sort of dismissing the movie as kind of a sci-fi thriller Groundhog Day, which I don't think is fair, but it does come, it comes back to how much of our, if we were in a parallel universe, how much is different from what we're experiencing? Because every once in a while, something would be a little different in the character's parallel universe.
And that's what was really interesting to me, is that the projection, first of all, my mind was actually focused on how do the projection into the other brain? So how could you project one person's consciousness into somebody else's body without wiring up the second person? That's what I was thinking about the whole
time. Oh, yeah, yeah, because the second person isn't wired up. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. Right.
And I was wondering how that could be possible. And I was also wondering about what happened to the consciousness of the person that was there in the first place.
So right.
Presumably that was destroyed.
I agree.
So there was some discussion in the movie about compatibility between the person that the consciousness was from and to. And
right.
that must be important in some way. But that gets down to...
I think the Jake Gyllenhaal character was projected into the guy on the train because... He had, what do they call it? His neuro map was the same.
Synaptic map compatibility. That's what I heard in the movie.
Some theoretical thing like that.
So
yeah, but that's not science as you're experiencing it.
Well, I mean, if there is a pattern that can be stored, what we can probably store is the pattern of neurons and synapses in the brain. So it does make sense. It's not obvious how to map all that out. And it's not obvious, even if we knew all that we could recreate somebody's consciousness in a computer. So the first step to this would be to hook onto somebody's consciousness somehow and transfer it or mimic it in a computer.
Okay.
And we're very far from that. We're very far from either taking somebody's intelligence, their consciousness, out and putting it in a computer. We're very far from building it ourselves. It's an entirely different step to project it to another person, and it's an entirely farther step to project it without having any devices apparent.
All right. Well, we'll get a couple of calls in here for Dr. Charles Higgins, who's a professor of neuroscience at the University of Arizona. And then coming up after the top of the hour, we'll talk about this ancient discovery that came out earlier this week, roughly 70 metal books that contain information that some people say is as explosive as the Dead Sea Scrolls or maybe even more. And yet it's not being released to either academia or to the public, but it may have a profound impact on us coming up later on this year. And we'll get back to that coming up at the top of the hour, right after we get a couple of calls for you, Dr. Higgins. But let me ask you then one more thing about the movie Source Code. And again, for people who haven't seen it, it's really not, whether or not you see it or not isn't really the question. It is one of the few movies, though, that proposes that science will be able to do this sometime in the future. You're saying it's inconceivable how soon into the future we could do this, but you do see a possibility of these robotic human interfaces sometime soon, even if it's for rudimentary functions that the brain is triggering in a robot, much like you said you were already experimenting with.
Well, so I have a couple of responses to that. First of all, definitely the idea of a prosthetic, some device that's connected to the brain or connected to the stump of an existing limb, those are coming, period. Those are already around in some form in hospitals, and you'll see those take off and become popular. So that's not a question. Whether we can do something like what they say in the movie, so you're probably aware, science often advances by serendipity. So there's some accident that happens someplace and somebody discovers, or there's a grad student at some university and they just try something that nobody ever tried before. It's always possible that in the next century, someone could discover what consciousness means and how to put it into a computer, and that could be done in the course of a year. You never know. So yeah. I don't want to sound pessimistic. My viewpoint is from the technology we have now and sort of linear steps from there, I don't see how to get to transferring consciousness out of a computer. However, that's something we would definitely want to do. Think about a person could live forever in a computer.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So what are the – knowing that oftentimes what advances these things faster is a commercial application that provides more funding, what are some of the perceived commercial applications of this type of interface that you would both welcome and the ones you would be scared of?
Well, so in speaking about the real world for a second, the neural prosthetics, there's going to be a huge market in these devices. There's a lot of people who could benefit, and there's a lot of possibilities, a lot of technology that can already be applied to that. So that's one direction we're sure to go. And we've already talked about the military application. So it's guaranteed that you're going to be able to react faster to whatever's going on if you have a neural implant than with your hands. You're just going to be able to fly a jet better with a neural interface.
Okay.
In terms of the Source Code movie technology, if we had If we had any idea how to take any portion of someone's consciousness and store it at a computer, there would already be startup companies based on it. That's something that I guarantee you people would want. It's just so inconceivable with our current technology that there's no industry based around it.
Maybe the computer version of people freezing their heads.
Well, in this case, it's even better than that. You could actually be alive inside the computer.
But that's what I mean. It would be the idea that's that kind of immortality that people crave, and they're already paying to have their heads cryogenically frozen in the hope that someday they would be able to be reattached to another body.
So when I was a grad student about 20 years ago, I thought I could build something that would be of simple intelligence inside the computer. So I figured I could do that myself years ago, and I've been proven wrong by all this work that I've done. However, I guarantee there's people working on that now. They're working on some ability to create some form of intelligence in software or in hardware or in some artificial device. And in fact, our understanding of consciousness and transferring the consciousness of a person to a computer could come from that path. It could be that we create something that's closer to the intelligence of a human in a computer, and that gives us the understanding we need to find what are the essentials of the human that need to be mapped onto a program. Now, it's really questionable whether we want to develop something that is intelligent as a human in an artificial device. So if I transfer a person into a computer, can I turn off the computer when I go home at night? What if there's a power failure?
Right.
There's some serious ethical issues if you take something that is as intelligent and as sentient as a human and you transfer it into an artificial device. If it has a breakdown, what am I to think about what just happened? Did somebody die?
Right. Did you murder somebody?
So do I really want a device that is on my person someplace that is as intelligent as a person? If I drop it and it's destroyed, I'm not really sure we want to go to that level of intelligence in our devices. But my real point was that if we can create some form of artificial intelligence, some artificial brain or an artificial software intelligence, we might be able to map our awareness, our consciousness, our experience onto that, and that might be the quickest route towards getting an artificial person in a computer.
That sounds interesting. Let's go ahead and get a couple of calls. This is Mark in Oakland, California, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Charles Higgins at the University of Arizona on computational neuroscience. Mark?
Well, hello, Dr. Higgins?
Yes.
Dr. Higgins?
Yes, I'm Mark.
My question is, do you think it would be possible with some sort of device that could pick up the electronic signals that go off when you have every sensory input and record these so that maybe the ultimate end product was the ability to record a dream, thereby you could make a movie just by dreaming it?
Okay, so I think that if you were able to record from large sections of the brain at once, yes, you could record activity in the brain, and potentially you could interpret that to make maybe a visual image of what you might have been dreaming. It's very far from our current technology, but if you could record from large enough sections of the brain, then that neural activity could be used to reconstruct some sort of sensory impression. The work that I'm doing is with dragonflies, and that's actually what we're trying to do with dragonflies. We're trying to record from their spinal cord and take the visual information that comes across their spinal cord and interpret it in real time.
Wow. So you got dragonfly dreams.
Well, they're awake. So
they're awake.
It's their living experience.
Let's get to Bill in Tinton Falls, New Jersey. I've been in Tinton Falls. Hey, Bill.
Hi. Doctor, two questions. First, Colossus, the Forbin project, would people be willing to live with that? Second question is using the real-time immune system and the knowledge that doctors, I specifically talked about an OBGYN who stopped the flow of a hemorrhaging episiotomy specifically at the point of the hemorrhage through hypnosis. Dr. Foster tapped in Japan, 1964. If you can do that, then why can't you use that hypnosis capability of tapping into the operating system of Homo sapiens in order to do a whole heck of a lot of other things in real time?
Okay.
Well, let me answer the second question first. So I think the idea of an operating system of the human brain is the wrong idea. So this is the way we've learned to design computers. So we design the hardware of the computer and we place a software operating system on top. I think brains are completely different. They're designed, hardware and software, together. So there's one unit, and there's no operating system that can be pulled apart. So that's one idea I wanted to address. And then secondly, I'm not aware of the Colossus project. Maybe somebody could inform me on that.
All right. Well, time prevents us here to go back to Bill, but interesting. I'll have to go look that up myself. Wayne is in Louisiana on Coast to Coast for Dr. Charles Higgins. Wayne, I know you've been holding, so I wanted to get you in before the top of the hour.
Good evening, gentlemen. Doctor, I have a question. I'm blind. I have a detached retina. I have been for 15 years. My question, I'll take your answer off the air, off the line, is do you think from an engineering standpoint that maybe in the next 10, 15, 20 years that we'll be able to do something with retinas? And I'll take my answer off there. Thanks, Ian.
Yep.
So I think the answer is definitely yes. So it's been possible for quite a while for us to build very small visual sensor devices. The problem with visual retinal prosthetics has been interfacing with the optic nerve. So there are already good projects interfacing with the optic nerve that have given people not great vision, but the ability, if you are blind, the ability to detect whether there's an open doorway in front of you is huge. And we're already to that point today. So I can see in 15 to 30 years, there will be visual prostheses that will give you significant vision back. I really doubt if you're going to be able to read or recognize faces in the next 15 years, but that's coming.
The Colossus Project, as I can determine it, is a movie. It's a science fiction movie that came out in the 60s or 70s, and it focuses on the notion that a computer would become sentient, and therefore it would begin to try to run things entirely on its own.
So this is the dream of artificial intelligence researchers. So this would be great, and I really don't believe it'll ever happen. I just build my program bigger and bigger with some particular structure, and eventually it becomes intelligent and I don't have to do anything else. And I tried that. I've been trying that for years. It doesn't seem to work. So I really think there is a structure to intelligence. There are specific brain structures that are involved, and we're beginning to understand what those structures are and how they interact. So I think it's not as simple as a computer just suddenly becoming sentient because it has enough interconnections or enough units. I think rather it needs a specific structure that we don't really completely understand, but we're just starting to get a grasp on right now.
Okay. And by the way, this movie is expected to be remade sometime in the next year or so, starring Will Smith and being directed by Ron Howard.
Very cool.
There you go. Again, once more, the connection between Hollywood and academia. All right, we have time. I think we have time for Tommy in Maryland. If we keep the question and the answer short for Dr. Charles Higgins, expert on computational neuroscience, much like the kind of stuff they're talking about in the movie Source Code. Tommy?
Oh, Dr. Higgins. Oh, my gosh. It's such a pleasure. One quick question. What if, it's a little off topic, but what if you have somebody in government who does something crazy diabolical, they know it's like totally wrong, and yet how do they then go about the business of reconciling that with themselves in their daily speech and patterns to explain that to the populace of the nation?
Well, now that's interesting.
I don't know how to answer that one.
Am I getting an idea of you? It's almost like somebody had, it was almost like their body was taken over by somebody else, almost like that, you mean? And they're trying to figure out why did they say or do such a thing that was so out of character? Is that right, Tommy?
Well, it's kind of like in my mind, I'm trying to be really brief, so I didn't want to go too deep, but like with 9/11, what if, this is like a truther kind of thing, like what if 9/11 happened because of these things happening in the government, and they knew that they were doing this on purpose and it was intentional, but they have to live with this, and they have to go about their lives. How do you do that?
It is a little off topic, probably outside of the expertise of Dr. Charles Higgins, but it's an interesting proposal. We'll just have to probably wait for the right guest. Tommy, this would probably be the wrong time and the wrong guy, but thank you so much, Dr. Higgins, for what you did offer us. Very interesting, and I will go back. I'm going to go back. I'm taking my wife to Source Code, and now I'll have kind of a new idea of how to look at it, too, with your suggestions. Thank you so much. Have a great night. And then, coming up next, we'll go back in time ourselves on Coast to Coast.